What I think you're afraid of is if I actually know him, then maybe I will have to make hard decisions if he's not responsible. Maybe it'll disappoint me. I think a lot of times those that move into a maternal energy have learned to manage disappointment and fear through solving and managing and a kind of hyper-responsibility that probably was a functional response in their lives at some point. But in a marriage, it interferes with each of you taking fuller responsibility for yourselves. Hi, everyone. Dr. Jennifer here. As you listen to the coaching session that follows, you might be surprised by how much this couple's experiences resonate with your own. Because as humans, we have a tendency to get stuck in very similar ways, and it's often easier to see these patterns in others, which is why Room for Two is such a powerful learning tool. So when you listen, you'll likely see yourself in these episodes, and when you do, I encourage you to use the feedback I offer to make important changes in your own life and your own relationship. Please note that to protect privacy, the names, voices, and identifying features of the couples have been altered, but they're sharing their stories generously to help all of us. So I hope you'll benefit from what you learn here. Welcome to Room for Two. Johnny and June, welcome to Room for Two.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So yeah, tell me a bit about what's brought you here and how I can be most helpful.
Gosh, I don't know how to start this. Okay. So we've been in kind of a good place the last couple of, I guess, the last year or so. We've been married for over 20 years, but the first several years of our marriage, we didn't really fight. We didn't really argue. We didn't have anything go wrong, it seems like. And then like our faith changed a little bit, our wants and our needs shifted a little bit over the years. And we both started trying to know ourselves better. And we were trying to like clumsily advocate for ourselves and trying to let ourselves be known and trying to know each other. And then conflict just started coming in, and it was kind of disorienting for a long time. So we attended a retreat in Oregon with you and another one in Provo. And we just, in between, we'd find this kind of like break or a respite, kind of a peace and ease. And we'd make commitments and strides and everything towards being better and being better ourselves and knowing each other better towards something better. Mm-hmm. But then like habits would revert, anxiety creeps back in, we drift back to old patterns, and we just kind of feel like we're in a way better place than we were pre-Oregon, pre-retreat. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there's still some things that we get stuck on, a lot of things mm-hmm. that we get stuck on. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking for some help on those things. I feel like we've accepted a lot of things about each other that maybe, you know, I don't like this about him or he doesn't like something about me. And I feel like we've been like, yeah, I have a husband who does this and I can accept that. But then I sometimes catch myself feeling anxious around the question, am I just ignoring it or am I accepting it? And is there a difference and how do I tell? And so, yeah, I crave that. We did maybe like 6 months ago, we felt just this for 3 or 4 months, wouldn't you say, Johnny? Yeah. 3 or 4 months, we felt this, just this ease and this like, it was like a glimpse into what it could be or can be. But then we just kind of revert back sometimes. And I don't know how I want to find that stable ground.
And yeah. Well, the good news is in some ways, all couples can regress even after periods of progress. But maybe what I would just out of the gate say is that because you have found a path, it's actually probably easier to find it again and to start understanding how you each slip back, what you each do mm-hmm. to kind of slip back to the familiar and what your path out is, because you sounds like you have some data on what your path out is. And then I guess just before I get your point of view, Johnny, I just want to see if I'm summarizing or understanding this, that for the first however many years in your marriage, I don't know if you gave a number on that, but like the first decade or more, would it be the right thing to say that you just had enough shared vision of what your life was about, enough kind of compliance within the church structure, that there didn't seem to be a lot of need to self-define and self-regulate? And then is it fair to say that what happened is that as you each started to kind of change your orientation to faith and maybe doing that in different ways, it was creating more conflict because you had to kind of sort out who you each were without the validation of the other in any easy way? Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think we felt before there was really no need to define what that was, because it was kind of defined for us. You know, here's what marriage looks like. Here's what you're supposed to be. Here's what a priesthood holder looks like. And we just kind of stayed in those roles, and it was fine. And then when each of us shifted in our own way, it was just a little bit like, oh, we have our own personalities and our own thoughts about things and our own things we want to do that don't necessarily fit the mold anymore and what we expected. So then we had to start defining for ourselves who am I? And to the other person, sometimes, you know, to me, Johnny was a shock to me sometimes, and I'm sure I was to him as well in other ways. So,
Okay. Johnny, before you give me your perspective on the marriage and where you feel stuck, is there anything you would add or subtract from that summary that I just gave? What just around your history?
That seems really accurate to what we've experienced. Just having to kind of, I feel like maybe waking up in my mid-40s and being like, wait, where am I? Who am I? You know, it's just is really, it's been really difficult to navigate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Okay. So then tell me, Johnny, from your point of view, how would you describe your marriage to date and how, and where you're stuck currently?
Yeah. I really agree with what June said. We did have that period of, I mean, it was more like 20 years of just kind of like what we thought was bliss in a marriage, when in hindsight, we were just using our belief system as a crutch. And for me personally, what came along with that was, you know, if there's anything rocky in the relationship or whatever, you know, it's all going to work out in the end. That whole mantra of, you know, but we'll figure out the hard things in the next life if we have to. And, but that quickly changed, and, it's been a challenge for me personally to grow up around those things. I've told this to June several times. It's like some of those parts of, I just call it adulting, you know, that of adulting in our relationship, I feel like a child around. I feel like I didn't develop those skills younger because of just that whole belief system. And so in doing this and in going to Oregon, that was absolutely life-changing for me. And then the other retreat we did in Utah. So yeah, when you speak to, we found this path, yeah, it feels good. We know how to do that, but then it's easy to revert back, and it's easy to let the frustrations of daily life, the frustrations of working together, owning a business together, family, all that creep back in. And then it's from there, for me personally, it's easy just to kind of put up walls and maybe keep that child inside that doesn't want to deal with the adult things.
Yeah. So maybe, why don't we, because, so just for the listening audience, I asked June and Johnny to submit dialogues just so I could kind of see where they get stuck currently, because I had a read on them at the retreat and interacted with them some at the retreat. So I already have some sense of the sticking points lately. But before we talk about any of that, Maybe just start with what was the pivot point of that first retreat? Like what, when you say that was life-changing, Johnny, what do you think was the shift that happened for you? And then June, what was yours?
The time period leading right up to that retreat, I mean, within like days of that retreat, was one of the darkest times of my life. Just feeling totally disoriented, not knowing, like literally not knowing who I was. My whole self-definition of how I was involved in the church, the plan of salvation, all of those things just were like crumbling around me. And then I was experimenting with a lot of substances, and it just, it's like I felt this freedom to go do what I wanted to do, but then it was so unhealthy around it. So, I mean, I literally was contemplating suicide at times, just thinking, man, that, it would just be easier to end this than to try to figure this thing out. And I know June was feeling that, and it could not have been fun to live with me at that point. But I tend to really internalize things and really hold on to them and self-preserve, all those kind of things, and just wall out June. And so it just got to the point where like those really heavy thoughts were on my mind. And then divorce, I just kept thinking more and more about, you know, if I wasn't involved with the church was so, the church was so integral to every decision I made in my life. Then all of a sudden, you know, I'm thinking, would I have married June? You know, we met on our missions. Where would I be without that? And I hold a lot of frustration and anger towards my religious institution in a lot of different levels. And so even to this day, it's hard to not let that creep in there. But
Let me just see if I can summarize and if this is right, but that you're the faith crisis, the disorientation was so disruptive that the anger, the disorientation was really kind of challenging your sense of who you were, what your purpose was, what mattered, perhaps. And then you were using substances, you know, it sounds like in a way from what you're saying that was reckless or that was excessive, and that you were disappointing June as well. Is that right? Is that the right picture? At least you were saying like, she might be better off if I weren't here kind of thing. Is that
definitely
the right picture? Yeah. And so then what then shifted for you? What was the turning point?
I think I reached a point where it was just so painful to keep going on that path. I was open to at least trying other things. June is my best friend. We have that going for us. I love her, and she is like a great support for me, despite all the things we have to work out in a relationship. I honestly consider those kind of like normal things, because we do have this foundation of we're each other's person. And she had set up the retreat, and I kind of begrudgingly went along with it, knowing that, oh man, I'm gonna have to face, I'm gonna have to look in the mirror. And that's absolutely terrifying. Honestly, it terrifies me doing it with this exercise. It's hard for me to look in the mirror. And but June helped me in that direction. And then like the first half day into the retreat was just like, I just really saw a lot in that mirror and that I had been missing. And it's almost like a light bulb moment.
Yeah. We're like so afraid of it. And, you know, I agree. It takes a lot of courage to come on to a podcast like this or to submit a dialogue and to just have a third party say, this is what I see. So that is not easy for anyone. And maybe what is also true is that so often that's where we find solid ground. Like we find hope, actually. We try to flee from our lesser selves to find hope. And strangely, it's going and like looking it square in the eye that we find it.
I think for me, that's what I found at the retreat, that I just wrote that word down, hope. That's what it was. It was like, oh, there is hope. And I think in that first half day, you were doing a role play with another couple that was there. And Johnny looked and just looked at me and said, I see, my actions impact you. And so I know that just seeing other people that it's, we can get through this. There was like a hope to it. Just like, we can do this.
Well, also that we're not broken.
Yeah.
We're like normal, we're like humans. All these other couples.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're not perfect, but we're not broken. Yeah.
That was really comforting to see that.
Yeah, exactly. So then what changed as a result of going to the retreat? And how was it shaping either how you felt about yourselves or how you felt in the marriage?
So after the retreat, we made some commitments to each other. We did some homework assignments, things like that. We felt all that hope. We came home just with this, it was a little bit daunting too, like all the things we knew were ahead of us and things we had to talk about and sort through and everything, but it just felt hopeful. So we did. We started talking. We started encouraging each other to talk about things, to not just stuff it down. Johnny did make a commitment to stop using substances. He saw their impact on himself and on the family. He made that commitment, and we just kind of tried to implement what we learned, but it wasn't coming from a more hopeful place. So instead of just ignoring or stuffing it down, we attempt to talk about things and attempt
just trusting in the truth a little more, dealing with what was real between you, it sounds like.
Yeah.
There was also something, Johnny, I just remember the last day of the retreat, I think, or the second to the last day, there was some self-awareness that, and I think it was around your sexual relationship, and I remember you saying it to June, and then you told me in the session. Do you remember what that was? If you don't, it's fine. I just remember thinking.
I don't remember specifically.
Cool. it was like a good self-awareness, and it was like a moment of you kind of self-confronting, and good things came from it in your interaction. But I just can't remember what it was.
Yeah, I don't remember specifically, but I do know, like walking away from that experience, it really was eye-opening, having just been able to put like a definition and on just humanity on some of these pieces of our relationship, and then having tools to work through them. And I think, like June mentioned, it did come away thinking, wow, my actions do affect her. I could see, because it's easy for me to be like, this is my life. Like, especially if we're talking like having a beer, you know, or anything like that. I'm like, it's my body. It's my life. I can do it. And I honestly am like, you know, I'm a good husband. I'm a good person. Like, just kind of trust me around this. I want to experiment with it. What's the big deal? Mm-hmm. And so stepping outside of myself was big. That retreat to see, like, oh, I see how that affects June and most likely my kids and my family.
Yeah. Right. And there's, it sounds like in some ways feeling controlled by your upbringing. Then it's a little bit like, I don't want June or anyone else to tell me what to do. Like, I get to decide.
Yeah, that's so perceptive. That's exactly. Yeah, I couldn't put better words on it. It's like, I've been controlled my whole life. I've been manipulated. And, you know, I perceive I've been manipulated. I don't even know who I am now. Just give me some space to figure this out. And if I want to get a little crazy or try stuff, you know, that's my prerogative.
Right. And then I think what you're saying was the overcorrection was like, it's none of your business, kind of, you know, like, I get to do what I want. And you can't tell me what to do, but it was erasing the fact that I'm still making choices in a context. You know, I think you're like, you can't control me, you know, like you're not the boss of me, something I say to my siblings. Okay.
Yeah, no, June will tell you that's me to a T.
Exactly. It's a great phrase. But nonetheless, my choices are impacting my kids and my marriage and my sense of self. This is not me saying, you know, that means you should never drink a beer. I'm not making any pronouncements like that. But just that what I think you're recognizing is that these choices shape the people around me and they aren't made in isolation. And so I need to face that. I'm still the chooser. I'm still the agent, but I'm not making choices in a vacuum.
Right. And I've done a lot of work around this, you know, to the end of me making choices, trying to make them to, as you teach us, to the best in me. Is this really reflecting the best in me? Is this what the best in me wants? And I've sat there and it's hard. It's surprisingly hard for me to define what is the best in me, especially given this whole, the whole experience with the faith change. It's honestly, I can just sit there and be like, I don't know. I don't know. I've done a lot of work around that. I made steps and everything. It's just surprisingly unclear. But there are things I do know. I do know I love my family. I love my kids. And so that was a good place to start. I love June, obviously. And so if I'm going to make choices, I want it to be a positive for those relationships.
And that's not trivial at all. You know, I think even what Christ taught was that the whole point is about loving each other. And so I think what you're defining as this transitional moment was one of kind of waking up to, these are people that I care about and that I have an impact on and that I don't want to harm. Mm-hmm. And that I may be wrong, but maybe that gave you a sense of something to anchor into that felt real and present and trustworthy.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there's the work of loving people, which is like still hard.
Yeah. I think that's I think that's the whole point of why we're talking to you today, because it's still hard. We're like working through tons of
and our self-deception is always hanging there ready to pull us into the familiar. Our ego is always ready to justify us, and so
I'm so good at all those things.
Yeah. Well, we all are. Yeah. So, okay, June, is there anything you would add to just kind of what the takeaway was for you guys as a couple and what shifted afterwards? Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. So he made that commitment afterwards. I was more likely to look in the mirror because I was always good at, oh, it's his fault. Mm-hmm. He's the one that's broken. I'm fine. What's wrong with him? And I think from the retreat for me was more like, wait a second, that's not my job. My job is to get clear on how I'm doing here and what my role is in the marriage and how I have an impact too. That was really important for me and still hard for me to do. That's what I came away with mostly.
Hey everyone, you've heard me go on and on about Cozy Earth's amazing bamboo sheets, their amazing pajamas. And Cozy Earth sent us the Everywhere Pant and Everyday Polo. John put them on and he just gets felt up a lot more. The fabric is amazing. I'm not kidding, okay? I don't know what it is. There's something about this bamboo blend that is just so breathable, so comfortable, so touchable, and also wears well and washes well. Cozy Earth stands behind everything they make. There's a 100-day sleep trial on the sheets, a lifetime warranty on the clothing, and hassle-free returns if anything isn't right. So for the dads, stepdads, grandpas, and every father figure who shows up, this one's for them. Cozy Earth's bamboo sheet set, Everywhere Pant, and Everyday Polo are designed to keep him cool, comfortable, and actually relaxed all summer long. Head to CozyEarth.com and use my code JFF20 for an exclusive 20% off. That's code JFF20 for an exclusive 20% off. And if you see a post-purchase survey, mention that you heard about Cozy Earth right here. So when you guys looked at the dialogue feedback, well, tell me what jumped out at you. And I have a little bit of a, I have some thoughts, but I'll hang on to them for a minute. But just what did you take from it?
For me, reading the dialogue, your response to the dialogue was more of what I was just saying. I was, again, in the dialogue. Do you want me to give a little background? Or
Sure.
We had gone away for the weekend. Just our typical thing is that if we have to get away to have a good, intimate, sexual thing, we don't like, I don't like in the house with the kids around, it just doesn't comfortable. So when we go away to a hotel or something, it's like freedom for me and creates that eros usually. And it's usually like that's, we look forward to it. And we had gone away for the weekend and that was the expectation for the weekend, but it just didn't happen. And so we woke up on the morning on, we're ready to leave. And Johnny was mad that we hadn't had sex yet. And so we had this conversation about it and what went wrong, what didn't happen. And of course my dialogue was more focused on what he didn't do. He didn't give off the signals that he wanted sex either, you know? And so I was again, and typical to my pattern, blaming him for us not having sex. And he was blaming me. I guess we were doing it to each other. But even in the dialogue that I wrote to you, that's what came across to me. And you're saying, well, yeah, but what about you? Did you want sex or were you trying to avoid it and blaming it on him? And it's probably,
what is your answer to that? Because I was trying to make sense of, well, a little bit the impression is I was just going along and everything seemed fine. And then suddenly he's mad. And that's not usually, especially when you're like, the expectation was when we go to a hotel, we tend to have sex. So just help me with your mind a little bit there. Give me your view of your mind and how were you making sense of the fact, at least, that you weren't having sex?
Yeah, I feel like I was, you know, it wasn't really like at the forefront of my mind. I wasn't really like, oh, we better do this weekend. You know, sometimes I am. I wasn't really that time, but I wasn't saying that either, but I was kind of waiting for him. I was waiting for him to show me signs that, yeah, this is going to happen and he really wants it to. And I didn't get that. So I was kind of relieved. I think you said that in the feedback. Were you relieved to not? And I, if I'm honest, I kind of was, yeah, a little relieved.
Okay. So are you saying, and really do correct me if I'm not understanding this, that you were reading Johnny as not being interested, being kind of annoyed with you, or?
Yeah, we were at a work conference and so I kind of used the excuse that he came home tired and grumpy after all day of classes or whatever and just wanted to eat and take a little rest, which he did. He was doing that, but I kind of used that as the like, oh good, he's tired and I don't have to initiate either because I can tell he's tired, you know.
Okay, got it. Yeah. So you're that's very important, the oh good part. No, I'm not saying that's because you're just a sex hater. I mean, you might be, but tell me about that. What's the oh good part?
Yeah, I'm not a sex hater. I don't think Johnny believes me, but and maybe it, so. there's something there that I need to look at, right? But I think it was it. Sometimes it's an inconvenience, and sometimes I'd just rather be like, I just don't feel like doing that right now. I actually felt like on this particular weekend, and not all the time, but this time that he needed something from me. And I was kind of stubborn, like, I don't just want it to be a job for me. I don't want to do it if it's just a job. And I was feeling kind of like he needed it too much. And I wanted him to ask for it if he needed it that much. I don't know. That sounds really stupid, but that's...
Okay. Let me just think about that because I'll get Johnny in this too. I can sort of can see the dynamic a little more. But just to be clear, so when you're saying I felt like he needed something, help me with what you mean by that.
Well, I mean, sometimes it'll be like a week or two before, you know, before the opportunity comes up. We try to make it a priority, but sometimes it's a week or two. And this particular time, it had been a couple weeks. And I could tell that he was like, okay, I have needs here, you know? And I didn't feel like it was, I want to be close to you right now. I felt like it was more like, I need something from you. And I didn't like that.
And then just to stay on your half of this for a minute, why weren't you eager to be intimate with him? I'll just put it at that. I mean, you're saying I mapped him as needing something.
Yeah.
That maybe the question on some level is, why didn't you need something? And I'm saying that a little, like, I don't mean that this should all be framed in need, but like, who were you in the dynamic that he's looking to you to satisfy something? It's not a great question, but give me your best.
Well, to stay on me, because I can say I think we both, but I don't know. I would have to hear from Johnny, but I think I was thinking more like, well, he's not showing interest in me. I want him to pursue me. That's kind of how I was feeling at that moment. I think maybe that's what I always do.
Mm. Okay.
I want him to pursue me. I want him to, yeah.
Okay, got it. That makes sense. Okay, so this is the question I want to go back to, because I think what you're saying is sometimes you experience sex as a burden, something that takes time, mm-hmm. something that you don't feel swept away into. And you're saying you felt like Johnny wanted something from you, but you were not feeling seduced or pursued, and you wanted to feel that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the first 20 years of our marriage, we just did that way. It was a job for me. It was, you know, he needed something. It wasn't pleasurable for me. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know that women could experience pleasure like that for a long time. Mm. That's changed now. So, which is good. So, yeah. So, I really do enjoy sex when it's, I don't know, when I'm desired and desiring, when both are there. Mm. And sometimes I just don't know how to find that. Sometimes, just in the last couple of months, I had to be like, I'm tired of saying no. I just want to, let's go do it. You know, I'm tired of saying no. And then I can really get into it at times. But a lot of times it's not, I don't know. I don't feel that desire, you know?
Okay. Tell me about when you have liked sex the most with Johnny. What were the conditions of it? What is good sex for you?
I can think of like several times where we've had like it's usually a weekend away. That's why I think I have this thing about hotels or weekend away, because it's when I'm not thinking about my list in my head, all the things I can control. I can just let go and not worry about what I look like, what, you know, what I'm doing tomorrow, anything. It just all goes out the window and I can just be completely present. That's hard for me. It's hard for me to be mm-hmm. really present in
the thick of family life. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So those are the best times when I can let everything else go and it disappears.
And is there anything in your particular dynamic or something going on between you that's important other than the context?
Yeah, for sure. I think we talked about at the beginning that for a while there was just this like an ease, and it was just, we were friends, we were lovers, we were giddy again, like with each other. Just, and I'm not sure like how that changes back over time. I think that's what we're missing, but over time it kind of like changes back. Like, oh, now we're back into the everyday running on the treadmill type thing. And
But what do you think was making you feel so like, I'm into this guy, right? I want him to do me, that kind of energy. Okay. what was happening in you, between you, in him, that energy was there?
We spend hours like talking. We're just buddies. We go to bed at the same time. We took your advice. Johnny likes to do the simmering exercises. Mm. So he was really simmering me all the time, all the time. Like every minute he was like touching me, just brushing me as he walked by, or like sending me notes and things like that. So yeah, just all the time simmering, and that just leads up. Well, yeah, that works for me.
Yeah. Okay. And can you say why?
I don't know. I feel desired. I mean, mm-hmm. It's on the front of my mind instead of in the back of my mind. I think mm-hmm. about it more. There's a connection. There's like a spiritual connection, mm-hmm. A friendship mm-hmm. connection. So it's not just physical. It's like just like heart and soul.
Yeah. Connection. Okay. All right. And so we can come back to your role in the week, in the bad weekend. But that's the one thing I would say is that you moved into kind of hiding and putting the responsibility on Johnny.
Yes.
Right. Rather than stepping forward more, even if it's to address the energy with which he's coming home, you know what I'm saying? So you just were like, oh, good. I get a pass.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And hide behind that because it's easy to hide.
Until you didn't get a pass. Until Johnny's like, what's the matter with you? Okay. What's happening? But we'll get to Johnny. All right. Okay, Johnny. So tell me, what did you observe in the dialogue? And
there was, as I was describing, that I believe, I mean, June and I both acknowledged that I'm the higher desire partner around sex. But when, you know, I tend to like really lean into that mentally, be like, yes, I am the higher desire partner. And June has set up all these rules that we need to go to the hotel so she can feel good. And I personally, honestly feel like Johnny hasn't changed how much he simmers June. I feel like the day-to-day struggles and stresses and the things that June's worried about controlling creep in and distract both of us from that Eros. But I realize I'm saying June a lot. I shouldn't be saying Johnny right now. And the dialogue you wrote back to me, I believe you deserve sex, but from the dialogues, I don't desire it as much as I desire self-protection and self-justification.
Right. And yeah, I said not that you deserve sex, but that you desire sex, I think is the word.
Oh, desire. Sorry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
The point is, I'm really keen on self-protection and justification. Yeah. I know I do that. It's like this real heavy instinct to just justify how awesome I am and hide my feelings behind this wall.
Yeah, exactly. So tell me more about what you know about yourself in that sense. Like what do you see yourself doing with June?
What's blatantly clear when I go through the dialogue is how hard would it be for me just to use my big boy words and say, hey, I really want you right now. Let's have sex.
Mm-hmm.
But it's difficult for me because I picture our sexual relationship like this very delicate thing that I need to coddle. And I feel like I try to really meet June and respect what June desires and how June feels around sex. And then I talk myself into this place where it's like, no, June knows I want sex. Mm. We've discussed many times that I could have sex every day. And I put that in the dialogue. I know that's not, like, I'm not expecting sex every day, but like, you know, I could. And then a few weeks go by and we have the rule of, no, it's just not comfortable in our house. If someone's here, we need to do it at a hotel. Then I'm like, well, that's said and done. We're going to the hotel. And on top of that, Johnny feels like Johnny does walk by and strokes June, compliments. I mean, to the point where I'm almost embarrassed because I'm like, I say this all the time. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe it doesn't mean anything because I feel like I do it all the time.
That was actually a real contradiction in each of your portrayals that I was trying to make sense of, which was that, June, you were saying, you were portraying Johnny as sullen, tired, not into you. maybe even resenting you a little bit for, you know, wanting to go early to these different things. And Johnny's portraying himself as simmering and present. Now, I bet neither one of you has got the story exactly right, but what do you think is more accurate? What's the best picture, would you say?
Are you asking Johnny or Jimmy?
Well, I guess, how would you each revise your stories if you were standing before God at present?
I would own up to, like I was saying before, I may perceive that I'm doing those things, but I have a hard time verbalizing exactly what I'm thinking. And I think there's the pivotal moment, kind of like on a daily basis, is like, do I bring it up? Because then maybe it's going to have this awkward moment of maybe June doesn't want to have sex. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know. There's this awkwardness. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. It's awkward to bring up, do you want to have sex? So then I like to just find my comfort zone of like, well, June knows I want to have sex. She can come to me. I can own that.
Yep, yep, exactly. So that's very much what I saw you doing, is that you feel rejected, but you're managing that feeling through criticism and this idea that, you know, you owe me. I mean, these are the rules. Why aren't you obeying the rules, kind of thing?
Right.
And I would say neither one of you is actually leading with your heart. Okay, but I would, just focusing on you for a moment, Johnny, is that you're not bringing the underbelly. Now, I don't mean needy either. I just mean where Eros lives is in vulnerability. It's the willingness to step out in front. And what most of us do is we think tactically, well, if I say that, is that going to get that? And I feel so vulnerable being the higher desire person, and she sets all the rules. And so how do I get to my goal when I've got all these blocks that she's in control of? And while it's an understandable place to go in one's mind, it interferes with the core energy of Eros.
I can see that.
Right.
For sure.
Which is, I'm in my resentment, I'm in my entitlement, and that's not a very erotic presence. Now, it may be understandable that I feel frustrated. I really wish she didn't have so many anxieties about all this, but I can't solve that. I can solve how my ego gets in there and gets regressed and self-protective. And it's really not about June anyway in these moments. It's about, am I going to get what I want for once? Right? That's the energy you're in. So it's not erotic in the true Eros sense. Because the Eros sense is, you know, what's it like to walk around town and drive everyone crazy, June? I mean, it's like to see her properly, you know, to see her that way. And, you know, when are you going to stop driving me crazy, you know? And it's like I'm speaking to the part of you that's the sexual goddess that I truly love and am grateful for, because that's an energy one wants to come towards. It's not self-protected. She could still say, Johnny, stop, you know, whatever. I mean, she could meet that moment with self-protection. There's no guarantee. Yeah. I'm not saying I'm planning on or banking on that response necessarily, but that's the hard thing about Eros, is that it is to risk the vulnerability of exposure while letting the other person have a choice. And your efforts to protect yourself make you get less of what you want.
What can I say that makes it absolutely irresistible? I'm just kidding.
Yeah. What's the guaranteed line? No, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, we got home that night. So this is when I'm like, well, really, was it about that? Because we did, you know, we talked after this. We didn't have time in the hotel to have sex. We were going home, and we did you know, talk and we asked questions. We were curious about each other. And then we said, let's try tonight. And I was open to that. You know, we were going to be at home. I'm not anti home sex. It just isn't really convenient.
Yeah.
And so, I was like, let's try again tonight. Maybe, you know, our son will be at work or whatever, and we can try again tonight. So we got home and I'm like, you know, come on, let's do it. And he said, no. So he was the one that said, I don't really feel like it tonight. You know,
and was it self-protective or was it?
I don't know.
Do you think it was Johnny at that point, self-protective?
Yeah, probably. I can tell you exactly where that comes from. I mean, like Gene said, like the first over like a decade of our marriage, it was just like, hey, we're going to have sex because it's our duty. That's what we do. Like, I need it. You need to serve me. I think that's where Gene gets turned off too, is getting to that spot where it's just work. It's like, here's a duty. And then I feel like in that moment that Gene just described, we're getting back there. And then it's like, I don't want to go back to, I hope this doesn't offend you, Gene, but I don't want to go back to, I'm in bed with like a dead fish. And I'm just like, they're like some kind of crazy freaking bear just needs to get off. I hate that so bad. Like, I crave that soul sex too. And it's funny as we're talking that we both crave the same thing, but then we like start,
it just takes a lot of
each other on it.
The ego does not have good sex. So you have to manage the self-protective part of yourselves. You know, can I just make a hypothesis? I think I would imagine that, Johnny, you were still kind of annoyed by the weekend not going as you had planned, and you'd been somewhat punishing towards June for it, and now June's saying, okay, I'm in. And June's giving a different descriptor, like, no, I think we had some good conversations, I felt more open. But I think you weren't certain, and I think your self-protection was still on hyperdrive. And when you felt more in control of it, which was like at 4 a.m., then you were fine to go forward. But in the vulnerability of being receptive, I believe that you don't want to be treated as somebody that just has to be managed. But I think it was also having to calm the regressive part of you that was resisting something potentially good happening, but exposed.
Yeah.
And June, when I said, you know, waiting till you had control, then you did it and you nodded a lot. Tell me what the nod was about there.
I think that is one thing that makes it so difficult, is that we both have that. We both have that self-protective part of ourselves that we're trying to track the other person. Is he going to reject me? Is she going to reject me? Are we going to do this? And then that makes it exhausting to try to just do this beautiful thing with each other and have this intimate time together. But it just makes it so exhausting that, like, when it was 4 a.m. and he's like, well, this won't be exhausting because I don't have to work hard at making it this experience, you know, it'll just, you know, meet my needs here. But for me, like, I am also doing the same thing. Well, oh, good. He got his needs met here and I'm off the hook for a little bit, you know? It just makes it's really
low level engagement.
Yeah, which we both don't like, you know. It doesn't make our sex life better at all.
But your egos love it though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really kind of, what are you going to let win in you, the worst in you or the best in you? So when you say that you also lead with a lot of self-protection, what's your view of how you do self-protection around sex, but also in the relationship in general?
I definitely in sex, I wait for Johnny to give me the vibe that he's wanting it, even if I do too, because I know he says he's the higher desire partner, and I always say I desire it too, and he doesn't believe me. So I guess I don't give that off ever. I hide that behind my self-protection. I hide behind that too. Mm. I don't know.
I also have, in my view, a more sophisticated way of hiding. Do you have any guesses on what that is? If not, I'll just tell you, but...
I don't.
Let me see if I can put it into words. I think I would love to hear it. One way I saw you doing it in the dialogue is you start taking responsibility for more than is your responsibility as a way to not have to stay honest with yourself and with Johnny. Right. So in the dialogue, at least, you started apologizing for things when it was very unclear if this was about your conscience and a real sense of that was not fair of me, or am I just trying to manage Johnny? And I would say one way you hide is by trying to manage Johnny. You know, whether that's how much he drinks or how mad he is at you or how he feels. It looks like caretaking, but it's a way of hiding in a role.
Yeah, I do that for sure. I think in all areas of my life, my work, as a mom, as a wife, yeah, I do hide. I'm good at managing things. I'm good at managing people. And so maybe I'm hiding behind that because I know I'm good at it. That's what I'm good at. I'm not good at initiating sex or sharing my true feelings, like being vulnerable. I'm not good at that, but managing people I can do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what's the indulgence in it for you? Because managing people, if you manage an office, is a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you kind of, this is how I would characterize the worst versions of you and how it shows up in the marriage. It's kind of like mother and adolescent son energy, which isn't very sexy.
Right.
Right. On either side.
Right.
Right. Because to unlock the rest of this episode and the others in the Johnny and June series, along with over 100 other episodes, click the link in the show notes and subscribe to Room for Two.